Coming up on Simply Superior.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
It's election season already, and the August 9th primary is nearly here. This week, the candidates in the Republican race for Wisconsin's 74th District Assembly seat.
I can be a stronger voice and definitely make Northern Wisconsin a priority.
I'm just looking to be an honest representative that will actually represent the people, not just a partisan politician.
Plus, he's the proprietor of one of Duluth's most successful music venues, and he journeys to Superior as a musician. We'll hear from Jason Russo and Woodbine. Those stories and the regional news and review after this.
I'm small, but I got a big voice. You're gonna hear it from the treetops. I'm small, but I got a big voice.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
It's election season already, and the August 9th primary is nearly here. This week, the candidates in the Republican race for Wisconsin's 74th District Assembly seat.
I can be a stronger voice and definitely make Northern Wisconsin a priority.
I'm just looking to be an honest representative that will actually represent the people, not just a partisan politician.
Plus, he's the proprietor of one of Duluth's most successful music venues, and he journeys to Superior as a musician. We'll hear from Jason Russo and Woodbine.
I'm small, but I got a big voice. You're gonna hear it from the treetops.
Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. It's election season already, and the August 9th primary is nearly upon us. We have two contested primaries in our area, both on the Republican side with candidates for the Wisconsin Assembly. Last week, we invited candidates for the 73rd district seat, and this week we'll hear from those vying for the soon-to-be-open seat for the 74th district, replacing retiring Democratic incumbent Beth Myers. A single Democratic candidate, John Adams, is unopposed in his party's primary. So, for today, the two Republicans vying for the 74th district seat that covers the Ashland area, Phillips and Greater Hayward, are Chance Green and John Shea. Both candidates were invited to participate in a 20-minute debate together or an individual interview of 10 minutes each, which is what we ultimately decided on. With that, here is our first interview with candidate Green. Chance Green of the town of Grandview is a small business owner, a former volunteer firefighter, and also formerly the assistant director of public works in Amory and the utilities manager in Ashland. Welcome to Simply Superior, Chance Green.
Hey, thank you for having me. I appreciate your time.
So let's begin with your opening statement, and you have up to 2 minutes.
Gotcha. Well, thank you for letting me start. Again, I'm Chance Green, running for the 74th Assembly District. I am a local business owner, and I have been a municipal worker most of my life. I grew up in Amory, Wisconsin, but had a family cabin in northern Wisconsin, just outside of Grandview. In 2018, I moved up here and made this home. It had always been home. I've always wanted to be here. I spent every weekend here in my childhood. But I started my career in the city of Ashland as a utilities manager in 2018. And then in April, I left to run for assembly. So again, thank you for having me.
All right. And we will go to the questions. Enbridge's Line 5 project promises to bring economic development, including 700 jobs, to the area, but is opposed by environmental groups and American Indian tribes who say any spill will cause irreparable harm to the Lake Superior watershed. That would impede treaty rights, they say, fishing and ricing. How do you balance these competing concerns, or do you?
Well, that's a great question. I'm definitely in support of Line 5. I think it'd be great for our rural areas. Like you say, bringing in 700 jobs would definitely benefit our area, and they'd be good high-paying jobs with benefits. I am new to this area. I have dove with Line 5 and Enbridge on this, but from what I've seen, everything they do is safe and held to a high standard. I don't believe that it would endanger anything, and they have very... I should say, they have policies in place and are very responsive if anything were to ever happen, an emergency spill. From what I've seen, they're very responsive and could clean that up. So I think it would be, I think the benefits definitely outweigh the negative.
All right. With this reversal in Roe versus Wade last month, the United States Supreme Court returned the abortion issue to the states. Where do you envision the Wisconsin legislature taking the state in light of the recent decision, especially given our area's proximity to Minnesota, where it remains legal?
That is a good question. I think the giving the states the power to choose was a great move. I am pro-life. I do believe that bringing it back to the state of Wisconsin, we will have the power to choose by elected officials. I am definitely against abortion, but I'm open to exceptions such as a mother in danger, rape and incest, things like that. I'm definitely open to those exceptions and willing to listen. And moving forward, being so close to Minnesota, which I would assume would definitely make abortion legal, there is an option there. Again, I oppose abortion, but I can only do so much and can only represent northern Wisconsin.
Okay. A survey released last month by the private group Wallet Hub found Wisconsin has significant disparity among racial lines when it comes to civic participation. This follows other studies showing similar disparities in education and home ownership. What will you do as a member of the assembly to work to close this gap?
I didn't hear the first part of the question. It kind of cut out there. Sorry about that.
Yep, no problem. Happy to repeat. A survey released last month by the private group Wallet Hub found Wisconsin has significant disparity along racial lines when it comes to civic participation, and particularly, they said, between black and white. This follows other studies showing similar disparities in education and home ownership. What will you do as a member of the assembly to work to close this gap?
Well, as an assembly member, sorry, I'm stuttering. I would definitely. So this is an issue, I guess, I haven't been privy to. I would definitely have to speak with more experienced people, more colleagues, if elected. But I would definitely be out to promote equal rights to jobs such as. I apologize. I might have to start over on that. I'm stumbling.
Sure, you got time.
Gotcha. And could I get the question one more time?
A survey released last month by the private group Wallet Hub found Wisconsin has significant disparity along racial lines when it comes to civic participation, and they said particularly between blacks and whites. This follows other studies showing similar disparities in education and home ownership. What will you do as a member of the assembly to work to close this gap?
That is a good question. As far as I'm concerned on racial disparities, I would love to equal the playing field as best we can. So promoting it in any way so everybody gets equal opportunities to education and the same opportunities for employment, I would encourage that in any way possible. Like I say, being new to this, I don't know all the avenues in which to do that, but I would definitely discuss it with colleagues in the assembly and move towards that. I would be in favor of equality across the board.
Okay. And lastly, many, if not most, voters are frustrated by gridlock in political parties that refuse to work with one another. Should you succeed retiring Democratic Representative Beth Myers, what, if any, of her initiatives or causes would you continue to support?
Well, and moving forward, of course, as a Republican and Beth being a Democrat, I've heard nothing but great things about Beth. I heard she was a wonderful woman. I haven't had the pleasure of meeting her myself. But politically, I don't believe we agree on a lot of things. I feel if I go to Madison, I can be a lot more productive, especially with a Republican-led House and Senate as we're moving towards that. I think I can be a stronger voice and definitely make northern Wisconsin a priority. And definitely, like I say, fighting inflation would be my biggest issue. People up here are struggling to make bills, pay bills, put groceries on the table. My bigger issues would be empowering parents. I definitely want transparency when it comes to education And at the end of the day, I'd put Northern Wisconsin first.
All right. We've been speaking with Chance Green of Grandview. He's a candidate in the Republican primary for the 74th District Assembly seat on the ballot on August 9th. Thank you for joining us, Chance Green.
Thank you for having me. Have a wonderful day.
And now our interview with the other candidate in the Republican primary, John Shea of Glidden. Shea says he's well acquainted with the differences between urban and rural areas of the state. Having been born in Madison and living in Milwaukee for 25 years before moving to his present home in Glidden between Ashland and Phillips. He worked for more than 20 years for an audio-video company and now works as a technician at a paper company. Welcome to Simply Superior, John Shea.
Hey, Robin. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
So let's begin, starting with your opening statement of up to 2 minutes.
All right. Well, hello, everybody. My name's John Shea, and Robin said, I was born and raised in Madison, and my standing joke is that, but I'm okay now. So I'm looking to earn the honor of representing the great people of Wisconsin's 74th district. Like most of you, I'm just a working person. I pay bills, I have taxes, and I have the never-ending to-do list around the house. I'm looking to be a representative of the people, by the people, for the people. You know, I'm not looking to be a politician. I have no political experience. I'm just looking to be an honest representative that will actually represent the people, not just a partisan politician. So I hope you check out my website. It's SchaeferAssembly.com. You can find out a little bit more information on my beliefs and my platform there. And then I guess I'll just turn it back over to you, Robin.
Okay. With that, we'll have the questions. Enbridge's Line 5 project promises to bring economic development, including 700 jobs, to the area, but is opposed by environmental groups and American Indian tribes who say any spill will cause irreparable harm to the Lake Superior watershed, impeding treaty rights, fishing, and ricing. How do you balance those competing concerns, or do you?
Well, you know, as I've driven around the Ashland area, I've certainly seen a lot of for and against the Line 5 signs, and I had to do a little research on what exactly it was and its history. And as I understand it, you know, the reservation up there would, just like to get it off their land, which I totally get. It seems like there have been a few issues over the years with it. Now, in general, it's like, yeah, I'm thrilled to have pipelines. I believe we need to get the energy to where it has to go. There's a lot of opposition to just stopping the pipeline totally. And, I'm just not really committed one way or the other. And in general, I do think we need the pipeline, but I'm not actually sure what benefit Wisconsin is getting out of it. We will get some jobs constructing it and maintaining it, but it really didn't appear like we were getting much of our energy from it. We were just kind of being the superhighway for it. For the most part, it starts in Canada, goes through Wisconsin and the UP. UP gets a lot of energy from it, and then it ends up back in Canada. So although I'm generally for pipelines, this one might be a little questionable, and we really have to balance what's the environmental impact versus, you know, our functioning society getting the energy we need. Right now, I'm not positive that the pipeline is totally the best idea, but in general, I'm in support of it.
All right. With this reversal of Roe versus Wade last month, the United States Supreme Court returned the abortion issue to the states. Where do you envision the Wisconsin legislature taking the state in light of the recent decision, especially given our area's proximity to Minnesota, where it remains legal?
Well, I think the old pre-Civil War law is going to probably remain in effect. Seems like most of the Republicans in the state are pretty adamant pro-life. It's a tough situation because I've talked to many people in the state and in the district, and it certainly appears like the majority of them actually favor some type of or more abortion than currently is available. I am generally a pro-life person, but I do believe we should make exceptions for life of the mother, rape and incest. But I'm also not sure that this is a decision that should be left to our politicians. I truly believe this should come out as, you know, a state referendum. And if it's, you know, the power is handed back to the state, well, I believe it should be handed back to the state. That means the people of the state.
Okay. A survey released last month by the private group Wallet Hub found Wisconsin has significant disparity along racial lines when it comes to civic participation, particularly between blacks and whites. This follows other studies showing similar disparities in education and home ownership. What will you do as a member of the assembly to work to close this gap?
Well, I think a lot of it just starts in our educational system. People really are not familiar with government and how it works. We're certainly tend to believe too much of what we hear and see on social media and television and stuff like that. And I'm not sure our schools are really teaching the civics and what we truly have as a responsibility to get out and vote. It's a tough situation. I've just talking to people up here, people really aren't, they're just not really interested in it. I guess it's a matter of teaching people that getting out and vote is kind of your duty, but it also in the long run it will benefit you. And I guess I don't know. That's really a tough one to crack. Is, you know, we've had a lot of disparity and a lot of different things, and I don't think we really have a quick and easy solution to it, other than just getting people educated.
And the final question. Many, if not most, voters are frustrated by the gridlock and political parties refusing to work with one another. Should you succeed retiring Democratic Representative Beth Myers, what, if any, of her initiatives or causes would you continue to support?
Oh, well, Beth had a bill regarding, the missing Native American people, missing Indigenous people. You know, a lot of them have been, you know, murdered, and a lot of things just doesn't seem to be done about with anything with that. It's funny. It's a subject line that's actually popped up in a number of television shows I watch, and it wasn't anything I was aware of, and as always, I was kind of looking into running for the assembly. I was looking at Beth's website and some of the bills she sponsored and co-sponsored, and that was one of them. And I definitely thought, well, that's something I really want to reach out to Beth on, because it's a pretty serious issue. Going a little further as far as our gridlock in government. Yeah, that's a huge problem. That's one of the reasons I'm really running. Our parties just don't want to play nice in the sandbox. I want to make a stop, you know, to that. We've got a lot of seats, not a new people probably coming into the assembly. I'd really like to be a part of that and get a new and better work environment going on. I'll work with anybody on either side of the aisle. A good idea is a good idea. It doesn't matter who thinks of it. A bad idea is a bad idea. I'm not going to support it no matter what side of the aisle it comes on. I'm not running to be I am running as a Republican, but I'm not there to be a Republican yes man. I'm there to represent the district and do what's in their best interests.
We've been speaking with John Shea of Glidden. He's a candidate in the Republican primary for the 74th District Assembly seat on the ballot on August 9th. Thank you for joining us, John.
Hey, I appreciate it.
And that was candidate John Shea, preceded by Chance Green, both on the ballot in the Republican primary for Wisconsin's 74th District Assembly seat. Next week, we'll bring you the contenders in the contested Republican primary for Wisconsin's 7th Congressional District. Coming up, the music of Jason Russo and Woodblind.
I'm small, but I got a big voice. You're gonna hear it from the treetops. I'm small, but I got a big voice. You're gonna hear it, even if you don't, that's okay. Everybody's got.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. If you're at all familiar with the Twin Ports music scene, you've heard of Wusel's Concert Cafe in Duluth. It began as Beaner's Central, a name referring to coffee beans, in 1999, and has hosted acts like Trampled by Turtles and Mason Jennings when they were, well, acts you might find in a coffee shop. Behind it is Jason Wusel, who's added a recording studio to that coffee shop, creating live and studio albums for a multitude of groups, and he also has his own, Woodblind, with whom he'll journey over to Superior to play at Earthrider Brewery tomorrow. And he joins me now. Welcome to Simply Superior, Jason Wusel.
How's it going?
So what's Earthrider have that you don't, or did you just find the need to get out of your own club and head across the bay?
Well, the cafe, it kind of is its own thing. You know, we do music a lot, you know, 4 or 5 nights a week, and Woodblind kind of plays all over. So on the July 30th show, we'll be at Earthrider, and that's kind of a reggae event. There's another fun band traveling through, and I think just because our band fit the vibe for the night, that's why we got invited to do that show. And it's always nice to play at other spots just to get your head out of your own spot.
I like the way you put that. And I'm not pitting you two against each other. Both are great clubs. You've had and you still have some pretty major acts, certainly for our region. But you also have open mic nights, and not just in music, but spoken word, too. Is that kind of like our local version of Amateur Night at the Apollo?
I never got to go to the Apollo for that, but let's say yes. No, it's really fun. Actually, the open mic's been going since we opened in 99, and that's actually where I've met some of my favorite friends and musicians. It's where I met Dave Simonette from Trampled by Turtles, and that's where I met Haley Bonner, Teague Alexie. Most of the people I play with over the years, a lot of new people come to town and they want to meet people and find out who else is playing music. So you get a mix of someone who's never played. We just had an 8-year-old drummer the other day that got on stage for the first time. So there's some firsts, and then there's some meet and greets from people that moved to town, or maybe they're on vacation. They, came to visit their parents and they're musicians in California and they might pop in just for fun. So you never know what you're going to get.
You know, the 8-year-old drummer. Who is the 8-year-old drummer?
Oh, I don't even know. I wasn't here, but they took a little video of it. I always work the mornings on Wednesday, so I don't get every open mic.
You know, we've had Eddie Ogiard, who's a bit older than 8. He's, 13? And he's got like 3 or 4 or 20 albums or something like that. And I think he's done your club, right?
Oh, yeah. I met him when he was just turned 9 years old, and he had just recorded his first album, and we did his CD. We've done several of his CD releases at the cafes. What a talent.
I know. I'm losing count. So that segues to you. You had your first guitar lesson, according to your bio, when you were 5 years old, and you started your band when you were 12, a little bit behind Eddie there.
I know.
What were your dreams back then?
Well, back then I was, just grew up in the country, so it was hard to even imagine. I was just doing it kind of for fun, and then when I went to the bigger town to go to junior high, that's when I met other people, and that's when I started playing in bands and just kind of there was nowhere to play where I grew up in the country, so we would just learn cover songs and we'd just play these country bars, actually.
And where exactly in the country was it?
I grew up by Lake Multona, this little town, Leaf Valley, which had a bar and a creamery, and that's about it. A little community center, so it was kind of just an intersection, actually, gravel roads.
Is that Minnesota or Wisconsin or
it's Minnesota,
Saskatchewan?
it's in Minnesota. It's kind of by a town of Alexandria. That's where I ended up going to high school and junior high later.
Okay, and then eventually to UMD, which I want to get to a little bit later. We're speaking with Jason Musso, best known as the proprietor of Musso's Concert Cafe and also known as frontman of Woodblind. He and the group will be playing at Earthrider Brewery's Cedar Lounge, to get him out of his own place, in Superior tomorrow. And without further ado, we should hear what you sound like. What would you recommend?
The Bluebird Day, because that's one off our new album. And that's kind of the title track, and it features the full band that we've been playing with lately.
All right, well, let's hear Bluebird Day by Woodblind, featuring Jason Musso.
Well, it's a Bluebird Day, my friend.
Bluebird Day by Woodblind, featuring our guest, Jason Musso. He's best known as the proprietor, well, he's best known in Woodblind, I guess, but also as the proprietor of Musso's Concert Cafe in Duluth. And he and the group will be playing at Earthrider Brewery in Superior tomorrow. You know, when we write our show intros, we sometimes struggle for ways to describe local performers. What's your style or genre?
We stick with ska. And when we started, it was just the two of us, so we called it Acoustic Ska Duo, which is kind of a rare thing because most ska bands have a whole horn section and are usually, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9-piece bands. So, but we love the style of the music, so we stuck with the style, and it just comes out with a more of an acoustic string band sound, but with the rhythm and themes of ska music.
Mm-hmm. And when you said ska there, you know, I thought, oh, wait a minute, he's going to be too normal here, but then you added a couple adjectives with acoustic ska duel. So it supports my thesis that we have a unique style around here. But beyond yourself, though, what is our prevalent style? Brianne Marie calls it Great Lakes Country. I'm kind of warming up to that idea, but what do you call it?
I think there's a lot of styles. It'd be hard to just say, you know, I mean, there's obviously a lot of Americana and bluegrass, but I would say especially when I moved to town, Duluth, when I moved to town, was kind of a rock and roll town. If you go back, you know, when Artie Quinlan's and Gil Junko and all the, you know, early start of Homegrown, there was a lot of, you know, and when I started my cafe, it was kind of more of a rock punk bar, metal bar way back. So I think there's still a lot of that in the area, but I think there's a lot of opportunity for Americana and bluegrass in more venues. So I think a lot of it's more underground and less venue options for metal or hardcore punk or any of these other styles that I think are, you know, not as easy to just drink beer to and mosh pits and all that.
Well, you know, when you said Duluth was a rock and roll town, you reminded me of a quote by Michael Baker. He, local boy, made very good. He became Whitney Houston's music director.
He's sure.
A drummer.
Yep.
And you'll recall a few years ago when, not at your club, unfortunately, but this place called The Deck, Elton John played.
Yeah.
And I don't know why I didn't go to your club, but... Michael Baker, he and I were talking at that time. He said, Duluth is an Elton John town. Okay. So I think that's the same time period you were talking about. We are speaking with Jason Musso of Musso's Concert Cafe and also from Woodblind. He and the group will be playing at Earthriders Brewery in Superior tomorrow. How about another one? Gee, I wonder what would be your choice if I said, how about another one?
Yeah, why don't we have another one?
All right. Well, I'm actually referring to your song, Another One. Well, what's it about, having gone that far?
Well, it could be about anything from rolling burritos to having another cup of coffee, but definitely inspired by the friends and the breweries we play and pretty heavy on the beer theme.
Okay. All right. Well, here is Another One by Woodblind.
Thank you.
that was another one by Woodblind, conveniently titled. We are speaking with Jason Wusso of Woodblind. He's also the proprietor of Wusso's Concert Cafe in Duluth. You said acoustic ska duel, so it was just you and...
Vico Lepisto on stand-up bass. That's the way it started, and then there was a couple guests on the first album. Charlie Parse let us do one of his tunes, and Tiga Lexi let us do one of his tunes, so they're on the album, and then a couple guests like Corey Kaufman and a few people on that first album. But then we toured and played a lot, just a duo. We'd go all the way out to Montana and out west, and just the two of us. But as time went on and you get asked to do bigger stages like Reggae Fest or, you know, Bayfront or something like that, it's really nice to have a bit of a bigger band. And so then we've kind of went back to some old friends like Jimmy Cooper on lead guitar, Tyler Dubla on drums, Brian Johnson when available on Latin percussion. Jen West sometimes will jump up and sing harmonies. One of our favorites is joining us at Earthrider is Eli Bissonette on violin. And then some odds and ends that jump up here and there too. Jacob Mann sat in recently with us at Bayfront for the Fourth Fest, and that was a really good time. And things change up a little here and there, but that's kind of the main core. And our new record features all those friends.
Mm-hmm. A lot of names in there, like Charlie Parr, quite well known. What's been or who's been the most surprising or unexpected act that you've seen from your club?
Well, I mean, we sometimes get some kind of major acts that something happens with their tour dates and they downsize to a small venue. So we've featured Cracker. We've had Marshall Crenshaw. So these guys had, you know, some major hits. But then like our show with Daniel Champagne, he's an Australian progressive songwriter and guitar player. And he started out very small and now he's selling out shows. So sometimes there's a surprise of someone that starts out really small and then really just continues to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And that's happened with a lot of my favorite groups that have come through here. That's a good problem.
I think you're telling me that Elton John actually was there after all. And you and Michael Baker were in the back having a beer. Okay.
That is funny because I did hang out with Michael Baker that day. And after that show, the keyboard player from Elton John joined the band I was playing drums in at the Brewhouse that night. So we got to jam with Elton John's keyboard player after that show.
See, I can't even make anything up without it being true, especially when you're involved in your long history and in the scene around here. Other than buttonholing you at your club, where can we learn more about your music?
Probably social media, I guess. If you look up Woodblind SKA, Woodblind Ska, there's a YouTube channel, there's Facebook, Instagram. So there's some videos of live stuff and a couple produced videos on the YouTube channel. And then the events we always post on Facebook. So that's probably the best way to kind of stay in touch with the upcoming shows. But then we also spread the word on Twitter, Instagram, when shows become closer, just to give reminders out there.
All right. And Woodblind is normal spelling. Wood and blind, B-L-I-N-D. How about a song to take us out?
Why don't we do our first song we ever recorded? And it was our first 7-inch vinyl called Big Voice.
All right. Big Voice it is. We've been speaking with Jason Wusso, best known as the proprietor of Wusso's Concert Cafe and also with Woodblind. He and the group will be playing at Earthrider Brewery's Cedar Lounge in Superior tomorrow, July 30th. Thank you for joining us, Jason.
Yeah, it's been a blast.
Thank you. small, but I'm powerful. I try to use it for emergencies. I'm small, but I'm powerful. But I don't really like to use it. Even if I do, that's okay. Everybody's got to have a backbone anyway. But if you don't hurt on me, I won't have to hurt on you.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and I'm joined by Rick Lovers, the executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Hello, Rick.
Hi, Robin.
And by Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
So, Danny, we just heard from candidates in the 74th Assembly District race, which lies within the Senate District, currently represented by Janet Bewley, who's not running again. Senator Bewley, unfortunately, last week was involved in a fatal car crash.
That's right, Robin. State Senator Janet Bewley was involved in a car crash on Friday that killed a woman and her 5-year-old daughter. According to Ashland police, Bewley was driving one of 3 cars involved in the crash, and she pulled onto the highway in front of a car driven by the 27-year-old mother. That woman's car then spun across the highway and was struck by a 3rd vehicle. Ashland Police Chief Bill Hagstrom says state police are still investigating that crash. Although alcohol isn't suspected in the crash, he says Bewley voluntarily took a blood test that is standard in all fatal accidents. And Hagstrom said any charges associated with the crash would wait until the investigation is complete. He told the Ashland Daily Press that he expects to receive all the crash reports by the end of this week, and that will be forwarded to the district attorney's office, who will determine whether any charges are appropriate. Bewley is a Democrat from Mason, and she is the Senate Minority's leader, and she announced earlier this year she would not run for re-election. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reported earlier this week that one of their reporting interns was on the phone with Bewley at the time of the crash and had told this intern that she had had cataract eye surgery the day before.
And you have an update on another fatal accident involving a Superior police sergeant.
That's right. A 15-year veteran with the Superior Police Department is facing up to 25 years in prison after allegedly driving drunk and killing a father and his infant son in an off-duty crash. The Superior Telegram reported that 42-year-old Sergeant Greg Swanson of Solon Springs made an initial appearance in court this week. He is still only charged with 1 count of homicide by intoxicated use of a vehicle. The prosecutor on that case had previously said that she expected to file more charges against Swanson. According to the criminal complaint, Swanson crashed into a disabled car occupied by a man, woman, a 2-year-old, and an infant on July 15th. Local media reported 23-year-old Michael Evans was outside pushing the car when it was struck from behind, and Evans died at the scene. a 2-month-old infant, Elijah O'Jannon, died last week after being taken off life support. Swanson failed several field sobriety tests at the scene of the accident, and he was released on $15,000 cash bail. He is set to appear again in court on August 24th.
Well, Rick, on the Minnesota side, and in far more enlightening news concerning the police, Duluth is set to get a new chief for a limited time anyway.
Yes, it is. A longtime member of the Duluth Police Department is set to be the first woman to lead it as interim chief. Laura Marquardt, a deputy chief who heads the administrative division, will be the department's interim police chief beginning August 1st. Mayor Emily Larson offered the job to Marquardt on Monday and announced her appointment late Tuesday afternoon. Marquardt said that this police department is a family and it's a calling, and to be able to serve it in this capacity is an honor and it is humbling. She was first hired at the department in 1995. She was a patrol officer until 1999, and then an investigator for its child abuse and neglect unit until 2003. Then she went on to the violent crimes unit until 2011, when she was named sergeant in the department's property evidence and crime scene unit. She was promoted to lieutenant in the administrative division in 2014 and then deputy chief in 2016. Marquardt is set to succeed Chief Mike Tuscan, who announced his retirement from the department earlier this summer in favor of a post at the Fond du Lac Tribal and Community College's law enforcement program. She said she has applied for the permanent chief job as well. The plan for the interim chief right now is to stay the course and continue working on projects staffers there have already undertaken, including a plan to receive accreditation from the Commission on Accreditation for Law Enforcement Agencies and another to conduct a racial bias audit.
All right. Well, anyone living in or visiting Duluth in the last year surely has noticed the new Essentia building going up. So when will it open?
Well, it's getting closer, Robin. Construction of Essentia's Health Vision Northland project is about 80% complete and is on track to open to patients in about a year, Essentia and construction representatives said during a media tour of the facility on Wednesday. The 18-story hospital tower, which is about 942,000 square feet, will become the new Essentia Health St. Mary's Medical Center. Dr. David Herman, who is CEO of Essentia Health, said the healthcare system expects to take possession of the building in February of 2023, and staff will be given several months to move in and train in the new building before patients are admitted, which is anticipated to happen in late summer 2023. Phil Johnson, construction project manager, said the project has 690 construction workers on site and at one point had 750 workers. Dr. Robert Erickson, Essentia's physician lead for the project, noted that about 21% of the workers are minorities and women, which is nearly three times as many as the original goal of 8% set when the project began. In addition, about half of the workers are from the Duluth area, with an additional 15% from the Iron Range and a large number from along the Interstate 35 corridor between the Twin Cities and Duluth. The new hospital will have four ICU floors, plus prenatal and neonatal ICU rooms for the women and children's floor, which also includes labor and delivery, gynecology, and pediatric care. Because of the changes that have been made to the top floor for the ICUs, construction crews plan to continue adding finishing touches next spring after staff have begun training. Work has started from the bottom and worked its way to the top, which means the upper floors of the hospital tower will likely not be completed until closer to the opening date.
All right. Well, finally, a long-awaited honor for an area veteran.
Yes. For nearly 17 years, Donald Wells' cremated remains sat in a Grand Rapids funeral home. On Friday, July 22, they were interred at the Minnesota State Veterans Cemetery. At a ceremony there, complete with flyovers, taps, and flowers, about 100 people attended to honor Wells, who was a private first class in the U.S. Army from October 1956 to August 1958, according to the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. The West Duluth American Legion had posted about the service on Facebook earlier in the week, and this got a lot of attention, and there was even a traffic jam of supporters' cars stretched from the cemetery parking lot that nearly spilled onto nearby Highway 53. But no one there seemed to know the man himself or knew of anyone who might. Wells was 70 when he died in 2005, but no friend, relative, or legal representative apparently step forward to claim his remains. Wells' obituary in the Grand Rapids Herald Review only indicates that he died November 1 of that year and that he did not want a funeral. Before Friday, Wells' remains were kept at Rowe Funeral Home, about 90 minutes west of Duluth on Highway 2. Shelley Schuster, one of the funeral home's directors, said she's been able to find living members of several of the funeral home's unclaimed remains that sit in a fireproof cabinet in the basement. But she came up empty when she tried to do the same for Wells. Knowing, though, that Wells was a veteran, Schuster contacted staff at the Duluth Veterans Cemetery, and she said that we worked together to get this gentleman laid to rest.
Okay. Well, we've been speaking with Rick Lovers, the executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Thank you, Rick.
Thanks, Robin.
And Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Thank you, Danny.
Thank you, Robin.
You can stay updated on these stories and all the regional news anytime at WPR.org and DuluthNewsTribune.com. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. We leave you with more of the music of Jason Russo and Woodblind. I'm Robin Washington. Stay safe, everyone.
Cold. Cold. Cold wind blowing me down.